Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush.
Chuck, are you okay?
I am okay.
You sounded like a robot that was like powering down.
Oh, how great would that be?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Just to be able to fully power down.
Just to do sleep mode for a minute. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night if I'm stressed. I was up at 5:30 this morning. If you could just literally power down for eight solid hours.
Just put on a timer so you can know what to expect.
Oh, God.
I slept really well last night, Chuck.
Did you?
I did.
Good.
I went to bed at like 9:30.
Yeah, man.
Woke up early.
Stuff.
Took my kid to school. Now I'm here with you.
Singing a song.
It's going to be a good day.
We haven't sang yet. You know, I was up early. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I'm going to go ahead and mention it. I found out a friend of mine from college died last night.
Sorry?
Died like a week ago. Yeah. Yeah, and this was one of those deals where like I hadn't talked to him since then. But he was one of those guys I was like, well, and his name was Chuck too, which is why anyone in Athens calls me Chucky because of this guy. Because he was there first and so at this restaurant at Mexicali Grill.
Oh, sure.
So I got hired and there was a Chuck, so they all call me Chucky. So any of my Athens, old Athens friends still see me and call me Chucky, which is funny.
You didn't get a choice in this matter.
Didn't get a choice.
No.
But anyway, the other Chuck passed away like a week ago and he was one of those guys where I was like, man, I'm sure I will see Chuck again at some point.
And you probably would have just picked right back up.
Picked right back up and had drinks, and it would have been amazing. So,
I'm sorry to hear that, Chuck.
Yeah, I think we're facilitating a reunion of that restaurant crew, though, slash memorial, which would be great.
Yeah.
But then it's just that, like, man, why didn't we do it a year ago?
That's also true.
God.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, rest in peace, Mr. Chuck Johnson. Great, great man. My first, like, really close gay friend, like, when I was just sort of coming away from church and meeting all sorts of great new people and exposing myself to like college life.
Yeah.
For real.
Sounds sad like stuff. A formative time.
All right, everybody. Didn't mean to bum you out
right
off the bat. Let's drink some whiskey and get to it.
Okay. It's only 9:40. It's almost 10 a.m.
What's up with these bagels? She finally starts getting everything bagels.
Yeah.
And she'll get six of those.
Yeah.
When everyone loves them.
Yeah.
And then she'll get
an absurd assortment.
18, like, weird spinach cream things.
Well, I like those, Chuck.
So. You're the only one, dude, because there's 19 of them in there.
Really?
I wondered who ate that one.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about. I have noticed that it's quite an elaborate assortment, and I think that the ticket might just be to pare it down to the essentials.
So that would be plain?
Yeah.
Everything?
Everything.
What, whole wheat just because?
I don't know. No, I like
not even?
No, no, I like a poppy seed. Poppy seed.
What are the five essential?
Garlic, just
five
a garlic
bagels.
A garlic bagel.
Garlic, poppy, everything plain, and then what else?
I mean, you know, maybe whole wheat for those, them what like whole wheat.
Or the raisin, like those people.
No, dude, ugh. 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 Someone told me they put smoked salmon cream cheese on a raisin cinnamon bagel. And I was like, you, sir, are a monster.
Yes. A madman.
Indeed. What do we got today, Chuck? What's on the docket?
On the docket, Noel, we have – I wish I knew when this was coming out in real time because we're actually ahead of the game.
We're way ahead.
For
well
the first
ahead.
Time.
We're going to say so much dated shit.
Yeah, but is it before Christmas? Is it after Christmas?
It doesn't
what
matter.
What year is it, Noel?
Exactly. It doesn't matter.
Don't even know.
We will just talk like there's no tomorrow.
All right. So social studies we're going to start with.
Social studies on Movie Crush.
And this is – one that I've kept going from previous weeks on the old Facebook page, a memorable thing that happened to you in a movie-going experience and not like I cried so hard during The Notebook.
Yeah, I think I had a bummer story about a weird abusive dude that was yelling
yes,
at
you
everybody.
Did.
Yeah.
Absolutely, no. Mm-hmm. And I had mine about the guy walking out of Welcome to the Dollhouse.
And like shaming everyone that stayed.
Yeah. So we'll start with and actually went through and pulled these out last night, everybody. I was not lazy for a change. And so you won't hear me go, which one should I pick? So we're going to start off right away with Chloe. Wow. All of the names. It's always with the names.
Is it Sevegni?
No, I wish. I love her.
Sevegni? I still don't even know how to pronounce her last name either. So.
Did I ever tell you about when I saw, here we go already, who was the guy in Brown Bunny?
Vincent
Gallo.
I saw him on the street in New York once.
Well, did we talk about this then?
Maybe.
The day I saw him in three places in L.A.
Oh, weird. No.
He thought I was following him.
Oh, that's funny.
For
really?
Sure.
He really did. Like, you saw this look in his eye.
At the third place, I saw that look in his eye. He was like, oh, shit, was this guy like...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm like,
and I bet you felt the same way. I was like, why is this...
Oh, wait, Vincent Gallo's following
He's following me.
I mean, that'd be a creepy follow.
That would be. So, Chloe.
Where's he been?
He's probably working on his next masterpiece, you know, in a dungeon.
With real fellatio in a film.
It's gotta have it. Crucial.
So this is not Chloe Sevigny. How do you pronounce it?
You don't know either.
Sevigny?
I always do the hard G.
Sevigny?
Mm-hmm.
All right. But this is not. This is Toussignant is what I'm going to say.
Man, if only we had Casey Pegram. Casey on the case.
I know. Dude, I just had him for The Shining.
I know. He told me.
And we're going to do a Kubrick three-parter.
That's awesome.
And Casey might just be my go-to guy for like maybe like ticking off like Kurosawa.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Godard.
Any of the Criterion type stuff. Casey's your man.
Yeah. He can really talk intelligently about a movie. All right. Chloe says this. When I went to see the movie It, the one from just last year, I was the only one in the cinema during the day, and halfway through the movie, a red balloon floated to the ceiling. I couldn't see anyone else in there, and I was genuinely freaked out for the rest of the movie.
That's interesting. I wonder if that was like a leftover red balloon from some like premiere event
many,
they had done.
Many possibilities here. It could have just simply been under a seat and wormed its way out as it lost air until it was free enough to float.
Or it could have, you know, passed over from the netherworld.
Sure. Or it could have been someone just fucking with her that's like, I hide in the theater with red balloons during It and release them.
That's crazy, too, that she would have been the only – I guess during the day, you're more likely to have an empty theater during the day, like on a weekday.
Yeah, that happened to me during Overlord.
Mm.
Only person there.
Was that any good?
Well, here was the deal. I saw it. It wasn't really on my radar, like, at all. But I had a window, and I was like, oh, man, I got a window. I can go see a movie. And I looked up, and that was the only thing playing during that window that was remotely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, sure, I'll go see it.
Isn't it kind of like a gore fest kind of a little bit?
No. Yeah. I mean, it was sort of – it was a mashup, you know, World War II slash sort of
– Sci-fi?
Not zombie, but like, you know, Nazi experimenting on, like, super soldiers.
Those
that are monsters.
Goddamn Nazis and their experiments.
I ganked that from Ben Harrison.
I love it.
Friendly Fire. He says Nazis.
I love it. Well, that's how like an old grizzled war vet
would
say.
Yeah, which is he ganked it. He didn't make that
I
up.
Love it. That's great. That is terrifying. That would have freaked. See, the original It that was on TV, which, you know, if you revisit it now, it does not hold up. It is very cheesy. Tim Curry does a fine job as the clown, but even that's pretty bad. That movie scared me shitless when I was a little kid.
Sure.
I had mega nightmares, sleepless nights for a long time because of that.
Yeah.
So I can understand that in particular being.
Killer clowns.
Yeah.
All right. Michael Griffith says this. This is a very sweet story, Michael. And you got some big hearts from some of the ladies on the site. I was interested in a girl when she and I were much, much younger. Our parents really disliked it. You see, we had grown up in an extremely fundamentalist Christian church. And if we got caught, it would have been bad. I mean, like one or both of us shunned if caught bad.
Like shunned?
I don't know. They were in high school. Like,
wow.
This is what that these things can happen.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You know? Well, we found a way to see each other by seeing a movie. And he basically said they like met the next county over and met separately. Like, this is how bad they had to go. He said it was very cloak and dagger. We saw Superbad. And that was when I realized I had fallen in love for the very first time. We ended up getting married 12 years later.
That's awesome.
How about that?
That's really nice.
And then.
Uh-oh, what?
Nothing.
Oh, good. Oh, thank God.
I was about to get so dark.
How could you do this?
My head frame's slightly dark.
No,
Michael.
I understand.
That's a sweet story.
That is a really sweet story. And Superbad's a good litmus test movie because it's pretty raunchy and it's got some refs, you know?
Funny.
It's got some, some, you know?
So you're like looking out of the corner of your eye, see if she's
clutching her pearls or.
Or getting the refs.
Or getting the refs.
Yeah.
If there's that look of recognition.
Duking the stats.
Mm-hmm. Got to do it. You got to duke it.
Baird William Swedman says, I was in late grade school, early junior high at the movie with my friends. We got our seats well before the movie started, and I found a Skittle on an armrest and ate it. My friend exclaimed, what if someone got butt naked and farted on that? It was so funny to me that my friend thought this was a plausible scenario, and I still laugh about it today. I love that.
That is very specific.
I love an old joke like that that you still kind of laugh at from 20-something years ago.
And you just remember. Okay. That's great.
Got butt naked and farted.
In the theater.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like something my daughter would do.
Presumably during a matinee on a weekday.
Yeah.
When no one was around.
Yeah. My daughter would totally do that. She farts on me constantly.
So does mine.
They just—it's great. They
I've
don't,
gotten
no,
to
they
the point
care.
Where I'm annoyed by it because she's like 10.
Yeah, they think it's
like,
funny.
It's,
though.
I'm like, it's not cute anymore, kid. You're like, right? Come on.
Ruby says, "Tootie booty." I took her to see The Grinch, by the way, movie number 3 for her.
Was it okay?
You know,
probably lacked some of the magic that
it,
you remember.
It should have been like better to me. Like I'm right in that wheelhouse of nostalgia and Dr. Seuss love and Grinch love. And it was just okay. I mean, it looked great, but the problem with that story is it's the same with like the Jim Carrey thing. The book is so short, you have to flesh it out with some other story that you're inventing about the Grinch.
More like pad it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
so
like,
it's never quite right.
No, I agree.
It was all right, though. For kids, it was great.
We just did an episode of Ridiculous History, plug me and Ben Boland's silly history show about Dr. Seuss. And I learned some really cool stuff about him.
Man, he's been on our list for like 5 years on stuff you should know. And I just never have gotten around to like writing the article.
We just did. Well, the main story was the fact that he wrote Green Eggs and Ham on a bet and that it only has 50 distinct words, 50 unique words.
Wow.
And that was the bet, was just like, can you make something that kids will read and that is actually engaging and interesting
before.
And only use 50 words?
Yeah, yeah.
And Cat in the Hat only had like 250 words. But anyway,
yeah.
He's a very interesting guy. He also did some very problematic, quite racist cartoons early in his career.
And he
worked for an ad agency and did some real kind of creepy ad campaign drawings.
If you were making ads in the 1940s and 50s, like you were bound to do something. Well,
and one of them was for mosquito repellent, so a lot of it involved being in foreign lands, exotic-looking.
Gotcha.
Yeah, not good.
Copy that.
Yep.
Not a good look. Sam, I am.
Yeah.
All right. Teresa Barker says this. This is pretty funny. I was peeing before the show with my daughter, waiting outside the stall when we noticed that there were urinals. And a boy from her school walked in just as we were running out. We still laugh about that.
You ever done that?
I feel like I have, but I don't remember specifically. But I know like... For sure, I've full-on, like, walked into a woman's bathroom before.
Yeah.
And been like, oh, shit.
The thing is, nowadays, if it's, like, a bar or something like that, it's pretty much understood that either one is in play.
Yeah, and there are a lot – many of them these days are just marked bathroom.
For sure. But, no, I remember it when in high school. That's when it would be bad.
Yeah.
Is when you just kind of are, like, you know, whistling along and not really paying attention, and then you just kind of barge into the bathroom, and then you're like –
Yeah, yeah. It would be problematic today. It all depends on how you handle it today, though.
That's also true.
Like, you could still get away with that if you were genuinely like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, and ran out. But if you were like, oh, sorry, ladies, but how you doing?
Okay, first, Chuck, who would ever do that?
Yeah.
Do you know this person? Who are these people?
Yeah, and the least sexy place in the world is a bathroom at like a bar.
No, not good. Not a good look.
All right, Lee Daly. This is wonderful. I don't know if Lee is a man or is a woman, actually, because on Facebook the profile pic was of somebody else entirely. So, Lee, whoever you are, whatever gender you identify with, I like what kind of game you're throwing down here. Lee went to the theater that had table service, Noel, drank a pitcher of beer, and passed out during Pineapple Express, and only got woken up by the guy sitting next to me telling me I was snoring.
That's so embarrassing. That's a fear I have.
Oh,
have I told you that I kind of sometimes fall asleep during movies?
Sure. The theater?
Yeah.
And what's your fear? Snoring?
Snoring. And I do it.
Yeah.
So fear
sitting up too,
realized. Yeah.
I think people might be prone to snore when they're like in an uncomfortable position.
I
like
don't
that.
Go to like 9 o'clock movies. I won't do it because that'll happen.
Yeah. I'm a matinee guy only at this point in my life.
Yeah.
Just because that's when I have the time.
True.
Every now and then Emily and I, for some reason, will go to like a date night movie, and it's weird to go to a night movie. That's how seldom I go to night movies. I was never a midnight movie guy either, really. You?
I mean, I've done it before if it's really like something interesting that I really want to see, but I never really had the opportunity growing up, first of all, but, you know, in recent years when I've been traveling more, I've seen a couple of cool midnight movies, but it's always a slog for me, dude.
I bet.
I always am like, I got to drink coffee or like, you know.
And at midnight, you probably had a couple of drinks and you're like,
oh, exactly.
Like way past bedtime. Yeah. Yeah, not for me.
Cuddle cat, cuddle fish to the second oil age. and his kingdom was full of darkness.
I don't dispute the Eros data, but if he's down here, we'd know.
Not blood, but darkness. The Earth's black riches. No. I could taste it on my lips.
Today, I want to talk to you about the science of transgenesis.
Transgenesis.show.
Bridget, this is short and sweet. Bridget Benalicia said this. I saw our priest at Anaconda.
Enough said.
That's pretty cool. I never saw my preacher. It's probably about the same as seeing your priest.
I don't know. Priest is a little more elevated. A priest, does he go to do the movies in the robes? Do they wear the collar?
They may wear the collar. Maybe. I don't know the rules.
I think they wear the collar.
But I've seen the collar on like airplanes and
That's
stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Watching a movie on a plane.
There you go. Was it Anaconda?
Anaconda. That's pretty funny though. Of all the movies, you know. A priest is like, yeah.
I'm going to spoil Anaconda real quick. The CGI snake vomits up, what's his name?
Was it Ice Cube or John Voight?
No, John Voight. He vomits up John Voight and then he winks. He's like half alive and he's covered in like Anaconda slime. And
Can you
winks.
Believe the cast in that movie? John Voight, Ice Cube, yeah. Owen Wilson, Jennifer Lopez.
That's right. God, no.
It's just like stacked with.
I forgot Owen Wilson was
like
in
quality
that.
Actors.
That's hilarious.
Except for Jennifer Lopez.
She's fine.
Oh, God.
Have you seen Out of Sight?
Oh, well, that was great.
Yeah.
Sure.
There you go.
So give someone the material.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You may be right. Have you seen that new trailer for a new movie coming out?
No.
Oh, God.
What's it called?
I don't know. It looks like the worst studio schlock of all studio schlock. About a woman who like accidentally lucks into like tricks her way into like a CEO job.
I see.
That's not qualified, but of course,
hijinks will ensue. Hijinks will ensue. Though
she ends up being overqualified.
Oh, she's good at it. Okay,
it's probably called overqualified.
Maybe it's called like the CEO.
No, it's even less original.
I'm gonna find out about this.
All right, here we go with Eleanor Gamalski. When I was 10, I saw Finding Nemo in the theaters, and the moment the movie started, I already had to pee as a 10-year-old. But I didn't want to miss a moment of that movie, so I never got up to pee. By the end, it was almost unbearable, especially in a movie about water, but I made it. And I remember thinking at 10 years old, if I ever have to pee really bad again, I can remember sitting through Finding Nemo without peeing, and that will give me strength. And I still, to this day, think about that when I have to hold my pee. That's pretty great.
Yeah, you got to psych yourself out.
I love it. Emily D. says, when my family and I went to see Signs, it was a crowded theater, and during one of the most serious and quiet scenes, some drunk guy let out a huge fart. It was hilarious.
A lot of farts in the comments today.
I know. I had a PA I worked with. And I'm not going to tell you who he is because he actually went on. This is, you know, PAs are always like, yeah, I want to direct or whatever.
Sure.
This guy actually directed a very high profile movie.
Oh, cool.
It was a big flop and he hasn't done much since, I don't think. But he did it with two Hollywood acting legends in the lead.
Oh, I'm going to guess what it is now. I'm not going to do it out loud, but.
A PA.
And as a PA, was he
a
farter?
Yeah, he was always like, hey, yeah, I'm going to be a director. And we were like, yeah, yeah, we all are.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm going to be a podcaster. You're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
That's
not. It didn't even exist yet.
So, yeah, this guy would fart, and it was the funniest thing to me. He would fart out loud among people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'd be in the production office. I don't know if he would do it in front of strangers, but these were people he didn't know well.
But he did it like, was it about comedic timing? Was it for
yucks?
Yeah,
he would walk up, and everyone's sort of cutting up or whatever, and he would lift his leg and just rip one.
He would lift his leg?
Yeah. And
like a dog.
Almost across the board. We would laugh.
Well,
like, there might be one person that's like, what are you doing, dude?
Get the fuck out of here.
But I was always like, I can't believe the balls it takes to just fart like that. Like, you're in front of your, like, you know, I do that at home.
Probably the same balls it takes to direct a big budget.
Maybe so,
flop.
Dude. Oh, God.
It's got to roll the dice, man.
I have to look him up. I wonder what he is doing. Phil Yates said, I dropped a tab of acid and went alone to a midday showing of The Matrix on the day it opened. No one else in the cinema. What? That may be the acid. The Matrix was not empty on day one.
It was the day one?
That's what he said. The day it opened. And when I walked out into the sunlight afterward, I could see the Matrix myself. How about that? Phil, the thrill.
Oh, man. That's great.
It's a pretty good story. All right. And finally, number 10, Tim Van Gent says, a woman climbed on stage just before the movie started and said this was her way of confronting her fears to be in public places. Three people slow clapped, and the rest of the audience was unresponsive.
Okay, that's funny on so many levels.
I think it's very brave and, kind of awesome.
It is, but it's also kind of like, yay, we're part of your thing. Good for you, lady.
I can definitely sense ambivalence among most people. Yeah.
I think you're just a better person than most people, Chuck.
No, I don't know about that.
No, I get it. But, surely there are ways to confront this, in therapy with role-playing or something. Right. Don't inconvenience a whole crowd full of people wanting to watch,
If I was there, I would have stood up and said, well, you know what? I was a late bedwetter. And maybe I see if I could get something going like that.
I almost just spit my coffee out of my mouth just then, Chuck. That was really funny.
I was a late bedwetter.
Does that mean you started late or you kept going for
a
really long
time? No, I kept going.
Okay.
I went to bed till I was like...
It'd be funny if a late bedwetter was someone that just started way in the bed when they were in their 30s. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I'm sure that happens for medical reasons.
Well, of course.
I don't remember how old I was, but I was like 10. It was old.
Yeah.
My dad was. My granddad was. It's totally genetic.
Interesting.
I've talked about it on Stuff You Should Know quite a bit.
I feel like I'd...
Trying to destroy the shame of that for kids out there,
Yeah. No, there is no shame. I mean, it's just a thing that happens, and then it kind of stops.
Then it just stops.
It's like a psychological... I don't know what it is. I'm sure someone could speak to that. But I think I did till I was at least 6 or 7.
Oh, well, that's late.
Yeah.
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 Look at us.
We're bedwetting bros.
Bedwetters unite.
Indeed.
Stream this, everybody. Noel, do you have Amazon Prime?
I do.
Have you ever just sort of searched through their... I don't even know if they're labeled classic movies, but just their
catalog stuff.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of good schlocky horror stuff.
They got a bunch of weird
80s stuff.
Period.
They really do.
Like
they
really do. Quality classic films.
Yep,
Emily and I watched Clute, Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland.
I've not even heard of this.
In the 1972 Alan J. Pakula film Clute, K-L-U-T-E.
Yeah.
It is you never even heard of
it. No.
Huh? Well, Jane Fonda won an Academy Award for it.
Crazy.
For Best Actress. And
I didn't know Jane Fonda had an Academy Award.
Yeah, man. This is the story of a woman, a sex worker in New York who – is it New York? Yeah, I think so. A sex worker who is a sort of a freelancer. She doesn't work with a business manager, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
So – a high-profile former John of hers goes missing, like a CEO of a company. And a detective who is Donald Sutherland, he sort of takes this on, is hired by the company, believes that she has the key because he was a former John to how he might have disappeared. So that's all I'll tell you. Very good movie, very suspenseful, super 70s like – suspense film.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this era. I'm looking at the poster of this with Donald Sutherland. Have you seen that movie Don't Look Now?
Oh, fuck yes, I have.
That's a serious movie.
That's a serious movie.
But that's around the same 70s kind of period.
And Donald Sutherland was king
about
for a
the same
while.
Age. He's rocking it. But that one is just like so upsetting.
Yes.
And also beautiful and just an amazing. It's like it's like a mystery. It's a tragedy. It's sort of a ghost story. It's like all of these things. This looks incredible, Chuck. I'm really
into
this.
It's great, man. You should check Clute out.
Really cool.
Very good. And his name is Clute in the movie. I think John Clute, maybe. And I was sort of immediately annoyed afterward, though, because I've always heard Clute and I always figured that was Jane Fonda. And especially after seeing the film, it is her story for sure. It is a woman's story about. There are all these great long, long monologues, single shot, single take monologues of her talking to her therapist about her job and how she feels about it, and how she feels about herself, and how she feels about men and sex. This just fucking awesome, man. Like really some of the best shit I've seen.
That's cool.
And they named the movie Clute after Donald Sutherland's character, which, he was
sort of a misnomer. Like,
It's just like it was her movie. And I think maybe I couldn't help but think it was because it was a time in the United States where, Donald Sutherland's in it. It's his film.
Well, for the record, I would have been like, what the fuck is a Clute?
Sure.
So, I don't know. I see that name. I didn't even think it was a person's name.
Yeah, what's a clue? Did they get clued?
I don't know what it was. First, I thought you said Clue.
They got clued so hard.
People love Clue, by the way. The movie Clue.
They do.
You had a guest to talk about
Casey
Clue.
Wilson.
That's
people
right.
Yeah. Got good response from that
They did a big screening of it recently, and they sold out like two screenings of it at the Plaza, the movie theater down the
sure.
street. I didn't realize it was such a like a cult smash.
There's a great article I'll send you. I can't remember. Maybe it was Slate. But it's about like how Clue became a sort of a cult phenomenon over the years.
Yeah, I have not seen it. I'm going to have to change that.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I'm going to watch Clute and Clue.
It is so much fun, Clue. I wish I would have known to have been playing in the theater. I would have totally gone to that. Had a little Movie Crush meetup. All right. Oh, by the way, everyone, Movie Crush Live in San Francisco for Sketchfest. Please come see me in conversation with Busy Phillips about the great, great indie Noah Baumbach film Kicking and Screaming. And that will be January 19th at the Gateway Theater. It's a matinee, Saturday afternoon. Please
come
out.
You love matinees.
I love matinees. I'll be good. I won't even be drunk at that point. It'll be wonderful. Finally, we're going to finish Noel today with Comic Card because we've been given that short shrift lately. Drew Ethier says this, if you could spend a night drinking with one director, living or dead, who would it be and what would you talk about? That's specific. That's much more than even dinner.
Yeah.
If you're out drinking.
Drinking.
Like immediately my mind just goes to some sort of legendary drinkers.
Yeah, like John Ford.
Yeah, or even like Oliver Stone. I'd love to get drunk with Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone would be fun.
Or would he be the ultimate fucking
bummer?
You'd
probably be smoking peyote with Oliver Stone, though.
Exactly.
You know, that'd be different.
Geez. Of all the directors, though, that's tough.
That's a tough one because I can think of like – I would just want it to be someone that it'd be fun to have conversation with. I wouldn't – you know, you wouldn't be someone you would like fanboy out with or whatever, but it would be someone
right. –
not even talk about their work. Just someone who you could probably like vibe with and have a good night out chatting with.
Yeah, like Terry Gilliam or something.
That, see, there you go. There
That'd
you
be
go.
Fun to go to a pub in England with Terry Gilliam.
Yeah. He's amazing. All that Monty Python stuff is up on Netflix now. Like all the movies, the whole Flying Circus thing, and a lot of these little kind of clip compilations with different celebrities and comics kind of talking about their favorite
That's
stuff.
That's on what?
It's on Netflix.
Oh.
They just all of that stuff. So there's like maybe – there's like an early Python documentary that's like about their days in university when they met and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's tons of little like the best of blah, blah, blah. And there's some that really highlight all Terry Gilliam's animation that he did for that show. And you forget what a creative dude that guy's been for like ever.
Yeah.
And how he's just still making it happen.
Legend.
That Don Quixote movie is finally happening, I think. We talked about this already.
I think so.
But I think I heard somewhere that it got shut down again, but then I read somewhere that like, no, it is going to come out.
Oh, God.
It's got Adam Driver.
They're going to have to make a second documentary.
About
the making of La Mancha.
Exactly.
Jeez.
I stand with that pick, Chuck. I think Terry Gilliam would be
I can't – I think everyone wants to see that thing except anyone who wants to pay for it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I just meant I think that's a solid pick for a drinking buddy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe let's go with him, the three of us. We'll go out and it'll be fun. Like, I love the Coen brothers, but they're sort of notoriously just sort of
– Serious?
Yeah, and just sort of – I mean, my friend worked – my really good friend worked on, I think, Hail Caesar. And I was like, oh, God, dream job. He was like, they were kind of a bummer, man. It's like they just sat by themselves at lunch and they didn't interact. They were just very much like quietly spoke to one another and you know, probably just working.
They're like geniuses,
they're working.
Though. They're like, I mean,
no, I know.
They probably
fine.
Have like twin language, you know, they probably like communicate.
But the point
by
is, I wouldn't want to like go out drinking with those guys.
Absolutely not. But you never know. You might
listen them up a little.
See them cut loose.
Yeah, I'm sure Ethan, he's dancing on the bar.
Frances McDormand seems like she knows how to have a good time.
Well, that's what I wonder because she's great.
Yeah.
And she would be married to adult.
Right.
I'm not saying he's adult. My God.
Chuck.
So much for having them on. Nick Jackson says this, Noel. What was the last movie that made you sob? And I don't mean a gentle cry. I mean a blubbering, sloppy mess.
I don't know if I'm capable of a blubbering, sloppy mess anymore, but I cried when I watched Adaptation for the most recent time.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I think the last time I cried like that was during Lion.
No. It was the Mr. Rogers documentary. Oh, I watched that on a plane, and I was actually crying
too.
On a plane.
I was too. But I was trying so hard not to be too like outwardly emotional in front of everyone. So I contained it a little bit. I watched Lion at My House. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, jeez.
About the little boy? Isn't it about a little boy?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
And adoption and like all these things at home for me. It was just like, hello, Chuck. We'd like to reduce you to a slimy mess on the floor.
Wow.
Here's the movie.
I can't picture this, Chuck.
Oh, my God. No, I'm a legendary crier. One of the best.
I'm
criers.
More of a, I kind of get like a little, you know, my tense up a little bit, but I sort of like it. I think it's, I find
crying
it cathartic.
The best,
I mean, when it's a movie and it's something moving,
oh, it's
and
awesome.
Not,
I
really,
it.
It makes me feel human.
Absolutely. Timothy Patrick McKinney. Timothy Patrick McKinney. What in your opinion have, or why, sorry, why in your opinion have movies become such an important part of our culture, particularly in America, over many other types of art forms? That's a very good question, Timothy. Well, I think a bunch of things. I think the catharsis of it, losing yourself for a couple of hours, maybe in America people are busy and they check out a little more enthusiastically.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
what was the – I'm sorry. What was the crux of the question?
Like, why are movies in America especially – why did they become like the sort of dominant art form over like other types of art?
I think because it's like you said, like it's sort of compressed, right? You can get your money's worth in 2 hours and then you've had this like experience or whatever.
Right.
And we're like all pressed for time.
Right.
So it's like we want to be able to get our catharsis in,
you
know,
2 hours.
Without too much commitment, you know,
2 hours or less.
Time commitment. I also think in terms of prestige, it's just because they're so damn expensive and it's
sure.
such like a, you know,
yeah, money matters.
This is a thing. This mm-hmm. is like, this is the highest form of art because
right.
of the fact that it costs so fucking much to make.
Yeah.
Therefore,
and promoted thusly and marketed
exactly.
thusly.
Exactly. Therefore, it must be the best, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm cynically, marketing and promotion have a lot to do with it. I mean, you don't see art museums pouring in, you know, $15 million on a new exhibit in marketing, you know?
Totally. No.
I mean, yeah. they'll have some banners around New York here and there, but
exactly.
not like movie marketing.
Yeah.
I'm going to take over the side of the building, although they might in New York.
That's true.
There are other reasons too, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, but that's selling that question super short, I think.
Well, I mean, I just think it's the crystallization of a lot of different art forms, which is cool. You know, it's like it's visual, it's audio, it's music,
mm-hmm.
it's sound, it's action, it's you know, drama. It's like all of, you know, it's art. It's literally people build things and display,
mm-hmm.
you know, make sets. And it's like all of this combination of like every possible
every art
in one pretty easily consumable thing.
No, that is very well said. I mean, think about that. It's got music, it's got art, a painting.
It's everything.
And then,
yeah.
Interesting. I love that. Plus, I would argue that it's – he does say particularly in American culture, but I think in Europe and,
oh, in
and Asia,
yeah.
it's
– it is everywhere.
Yeah.
Of course in Asia. Like a lot of these – when I first started hearing about like the Chan Wook Park films and like Old Boy and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that, like that dude's like a god over there.
You know?
Like those movies made so much money before we
and the history of it too.
Even heard of them. Of course the history, yeah. But – Casey, who you talked to about The Shining, goes to France every year and sees all the Cannes films or whatever.
Man.
And it's just like a way of life over
yeah.
there, you know. And I would argue that we have the blockbuster side of it over here, but theirs
right.
is more the high art
sure.
side of it, which
still,
we, you know, it's a little more niche over here. Whereas
yeah.
there, it's a little more like that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Number four, Trish Lauterhaus Gilbreth. Says this, what is it about Atlanta that's helped turn it into a mini Hollywood? Well, first and foremost, the tax credit,
yeah.
and I don't even think cynically, that is the sole reason why production started coming to Atlanta.
They did a good job with it.
Because it's like a lot of money back if you shoot here
mm-hmm.
that they can save. But I will say this, if Atlanta didn't have a whole lot of other things going for it, it would not have lasted.
Well, it has a very varied landscape too. It's like
you can
shoot in the woods.
Yep.
You can shoot in a city looking
place. You can
play
for New York. You can play
you can
it
play
for a lot
yeah,
of different
exactly.
places.
That's
play
very,
for Middle America,
mm-hmm.
the suburbs, mountains.
Go outside of town
Savannah,
a little bit.
Go to the ocean.
Whatever.
It's got
yeah.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's Atlanta versus, you know, Georgia, but they base out of Atlanta.
They base out of Atlanta, but Atlanta's so central. You can get to, like, a lot of these, like, you know, like Crawfordville, for example, or, like, some of these little towns.
Yeah,
like,
you can
the
do
way
small
they
town.
Did, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's that. The tax credit's why they come, but then you can shoot a lot of different places. I think the stable of crews in Atlanta before, like, a lot of people have moved here from L.A. to work, and a lot of people just come here to work and then go back to L.A. But that core crew of Atlanta crew that I used to work with before the movie business got super huge was always very strong. And, like, that good foundation, like, you're not going to go anywhere where the crews suck. And Atlanta always had a rep for working a little slower because we're in the South. But the crews were always really good.
Mm-hmm.
And now the infrastructure's there. They've built studios and lighting houses and wardrobe shops and prop shops and all the shit that you used to have to kind of truck in from L.A. You don't have to do that anymore.
It's very true.
It's all there now.
Yeah, it is. And I was going to say, you know, cost of living's pretty decent.
Cost of living?
It is, but it's like, you know, that's sort of the double-edged sword of this. Now that all this stuff's coming in, all this money's coming in, people
sure.
are starting to get priced out of their neighborhoods
yeah.
and stuff. And there's a lot of pretty rampant gentrification
yeah.
happening when the people that used to just truck in from L.A. now decide
right.
they want to buy a house and
right.
they want to live, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Emily and I, when we were looking, you know, we had to rent a house right now because we're working on our home. There are ads for, like, house rentals that are clearly geared toward production people. And you can tell for two reasons, because one, they flat out say, like, your production is a great house. And then it's, like, literally double what a house rental should be. I mean, they're jacking it so high. It's like you would not believe it. Like $5,000 and $6,000 a month to rent a house.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Wow.
We did not get one of those houses.
Yeah.
Clearly. And finally, Vanessa Cashman says, what are your thoughts on the last shot of The Graduate? When they run off and get on the bus, their faces, do you think they made a mistake? What was intended by the director? Well, that's a world famous, legendary shot. Is the end of The Graduate when Elaine and Ben climb on that bus, go to the back. He is just spoiler, if you haven't seen The Graduate, turn it off. He has just sort of rescued her / hijacked her from her own wedding. And they run off together and she's in her wedding dress. And then they just sit there and, like, are kind of laughing at first. You've seen it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that laughter turns into sort of just like a...
Well, it's like, what do we do now?
Yeah. And they're both sort of just looking off in the distance like,
well,
wow.
It's also like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, we got caught up in this grand romantic gesture.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we don't know each other at all.
Yeah.
And what the fuck do we do now?
But it happens so fast. Like, the look that they give on the bus, I always felt was like the look that you have a week later. And they had it immediately.
But isn't that also what elevates that beyond just like the super saccharine happy ending kind of situation that's like totally unrealistic
oh,
and actually
for sure.
gives it a grounds it in like
very
real,
much.
You know, experience or whatever? Because
yeah.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, grounds it in reality, gives it a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, it's easy to get swept up in grand romantic gestures
yeah.
and just the idea of love and stuff as opposed to like the function of like being in a relationship
yeah.
with somebody, you know?
It's interesting because you in movies, you always see the you know, running beside the train and then they jump off and hug and you always see the big moment. And I always wonder, like, what happens 5 minutes later? And in this case, they showed that.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
No, that's a good question and a good shot.
Good one, Vanessa. All right, Noel, that's it.
That was a good one, Chuck.
How long was that? That
felt 30, like 38.
Really?
And counting.
Thought like we were jibber-jabbing.
I don't know. It's possible.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
We'll let Ramsey sort it out.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Yes.